Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:26 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is September 27th, and today was notable for one particular reason, and that is that the Trump administration have released their tax plan, and it is highly ambitious. They want to reduce the corporate tax rate to 20%, which has obviously benefited the Russell 2000. And it broke upwards in emphatic fashion in here today. It's been largely range-bound for most of this year, but considering that it is the Russell, represents the majority of, or at least the companies within the Russell, are mostly those types of companies that are paying the higher corporate taxes rather than the big exporters, which can manipulate their foreign transactions to ensure they pay very little tax. That's not usually the case for small to medium-sized enterprises, and that's what you've got with the Russell 2000. So it is obviously responding most emphatically to that proposal. I suppose the one fly in the ointment, the one thing that is perhaps something that we do need to consider, is how difficult is this tax plan going to be to pass through the House. There have certainly been some carrots in terms of the middle class worker, where the tax deduction, or the basically a family would have to earn $24,000 before they make they have to pay any tax at all. So that will certainly be welcomed in some quarters. But it is the removal of the deduction for the local and state taxes is going to be the big obstacle to getting this particular piece of legislation passed, because what it is going to do is put particular pressure on politicians from California and New York. And because the House is represented by population, and these are two of the most populous states, then that is going to represent a headwind. Nonetheless, the potential to get simpler taxes, lower taxes, and simpler bans are all very positive. And if it can in fact get passed, then what this year has been about has been pricing in the potential for tax reform to get passed. And this is an ambitious tax plan, and it is still a bullish environment. When we look at the S&P 500, it is still in a consistent trend. It moved to a new all-time high very briefly in here today. It wasn't up nearly to the same extent as the Russell, for I think quite obvious reasons. But by and large, this should be positive. And as long as we have consistent trends, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. I spent a couple of hours yesterday at the Beverly Hotel listening to Jeff Gundlach, and what he had to say was quite similar, that there is no evidence of a recession right now. But the thing that he was ruing was that the horizon for that prediction is quite short based on what he looks at. And one of the things that he was paying particular attention to, which I thought was really quite interesting, was corporate bond spreads. And that is something that generally tends to really do better, or what, in fact, what we really used to I'm not being distinct because I'm looking for the ticker, I apologize for that. It is CPI, BARC. And what we generally see before recessions is that the corporate bond spread starts to rise. And considering that what we have here is an environment where the high yield spread has been largely inert for much of the last year, we cannot say that high yield spreads are rising right now. In fact, they are trending lower. And there has been a loss of momentum over this year, but on the one hand, we could say that's a base, but it will not confirm that it's a base until it has sustained a move above the trend mean. And it's been an incredibly inert environment, so really it's just a 30 basis point move would break this downtrend. What we certainly saw, and we have evidence of it on the chart here, because this is a 10-year chart, is that high yield spreads were surging all the way through 2007, and then they really took off in 2008. And that was a really great lead indicator from the perspective of when to expect the next recession. And it is not flashing even a warning light in here right now. So then that would suggest that we are not going to have a recession this year. And generally speaking, high yield spreads would be trending higher for at least 6 months before we get a recession. So when we start to take that in tandem with the yield curve spread and we look at other indicators, then there really isn't a signal just yet that we're going to have a recession. But these are the things that we'll be keeping an eye on. When we start to see them changing, well, then we will change our view. In the meantime, the most likely scenario is that we are going to have additional upside. And the potential for a boost, however short term it might be, as a result of these tax cuts, has also been beneficial for the dollar. And the Fed does appear likely to raise rates in December. The bond market doesn't really believe it, but what we look at when we look at this dollar index, we can see that I think the aspect has changed. This is the second upward dynamic in a row, so 2 consecutive weeks on the upside, and it's been a while since we've seen that. It's looking increasingly likely that we could have a failed downside break, which could take us back up towards the trend mean. It could take us even higher than that if it's a confirmed failed downside break. And that one would anticipate that that would weigh on the price of commodities, and not least gold. And gold was lower in here today. It's pulling back below the $1,300 area, so it has negated that upper dynamic that we saw on Monday. It hasn't quite unwound its overbought condition relative to the trend mean just yet. But I think it is for the bulls to prove in here, and I think it is going to need a weaker dollar in order to really start to get people interested in gold once more. But it is also worth looking at oil prices. And Brent crude was also in negative territory in here today. So the dollar is taking, or at least is initiating a respite in what has been a really very impressive move in crude oil prices over the last 5 consecutive weeks. It's due some consolidation, and it is getting it. And what we also saw headlines today was that North Sea producers are starting to hedge their exposure. There was a lot of hedging activity went on last year around $60, and really into the first couple of months of this year. And considering that if we look at that futures curve and prices for November are out to 57, and you can hedge at around $56-$57 all the way out to November of 2018. Prices aren't quite that good out to 2019, but that's probably good enough for a lot of people. Considering one of the statistics that was mentioned yesterday is that supply out of the Permian Basin in Texas is down to $23 a barrel. If they can hedge at 57, well, that's a very tidy profit, and that also really helps to just ram home the point that the USA is an important swing producer, and that is something that is not about to change, because unconventional supply has got a key advantage relative to conventional supply in that it is highly adaptive to price movements. I think it's also worth keeping an eye on the industrial metals. So, for example, zinc prices have been among the better performers. And when we look at that, what we're presented with is this very lengthy ranging phase, a first step above the base, and then we get the breakout, and now it is sustaining this move above 3,000. And this is a very consistent advance. This is practically textbook in terms of that long base, then a second V bottom back there in 2015. It breaks to the new high. Nobody wants to believe it. It goes sideways for the better part of a year, holds on to the advance, and then it breaks additionally on the upside. And if we look at that, even with more back history, we can see that relative to the peak back in, I think it was probably 2006 for zinc, that prices are still just a fraction of that, a little bit more than half. Then there is the potential for additional upside in here. And I think, when we look at the industrial metal complex, that is where we see the keenest leverage to synchronized global economic expansion. We have this period of time where there has been an incredible amount of money spent by central banks in buying economic growth. They have succeeded. We have synchronized global economic expansion. Now the question is, how long is that going to persist before central bankers have raised rates enough to choke it off? And that is a big question. And when they eventually have risen rates enough to choke it off, well, we'll have a recession then. But there's no sign of it yet. And in the meantime, there is ample potential for cyclical sectors like the industrial metal complex, which is very much leveraged to synchronized global economic expansion, to do better. And the banking sector should also do better because it is leveraged to economic growth and the interest rate cycle, and the S&P 500 Banks Index is pressuring the upper side of this range so far for the year. The Nasdaq Biotech Index, I believe, is representative of the cyclical part of the technology sector. I think there has been this massive transition within the technology sector over the last 5 or 6 years. Classically, technology companies have been highly cyclical because they have been conditioned into this framework where they were selling the newest item, and then they would get these lumpy sales, and then they would have a dry spell until they came out with the next new product. But what we're increasingly seeing is the rollout of a subscription model, which is being adopted by an increasingly large number of companies, and that is smoothening out their cash flows. They're no longer cyclical. They're turning into these consumer staple or consumer discretionary type companies, whereas that is not the case within biotechnology. They're certainly not subscription models. They are highly dependent on getting the next new thing out and then getting this big lump of revenue coming in as people take on the new product until the next new thing comes out. So the fact that they are moving back into a position of outperformance is further evidence of this return of the performance of cyclicals. And generally speaking, that when resources are doing well, and banks are doing well, and biotechnology is doing well, then and moving to positions of outperformance because of synchronized global economic expansion, then we know that we're in the latter stages of a cyclical expansion. It doesn't mean that it's over. It simply means that we're in the latter stages of it. And considering that the market bottomed in either, depending on which market you're talking about, 2008 or early 2009, it's hardly a big surprise for people, considering the market has been going up for almost 10 years already. So that is perhaps not news. So we will be watching for what are the lead indicators for a recession. But in the meantime, as long as stock markets remain in consistent trends, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The fact that the dollar was strong means that the yen took some additional weakness in here today. It wasn't didn't quite hold it, but the Nikkei is holding around this 20,000 level. And if we do get additional yen weakness, then I think we can anticipate that it is going to break successfully on the upside. And in the UK, the FTSE 100 has been mostly range bound just about all of this year, but it is now firming from the region of the trend mean. It's exactly where it needed to find support, and it's beginning to do that. And when we look at Europe, the Euro stocks, that's the broad index, has bounced pretty impressively from the region of the trend mean. It had come back very gently over much of the last few months, and now it is bouncing in pretty emphatic fashion. And of course, that is being getting the tailwind from the euro unwinding at least part of its overbought condition, and it is now testing that progression of higher reaction lows and has pulled back into the underlying range. So that is at least short-term resistance in the region of 120, and potentially a process of mean reversion is now unfolding. And the pound, which done rather well over the last few weeks, is now also unwinding that overbought condition, but it is not coming down nearly as quickly as the euro is. And I'm looking rather closely at Australia these days, because the ASX has been so inert. And the fact that a major index like that, which is prone to volatility, has been going nowhere since June, I find rather suspicious. I think it's inevitable that it is going to break on the upside. It's unlikely, I think, that the ASX is going to break on the downside when just about every other stock market is doing well, and also that the commodity cycle is, I think, supporting it. But of course, there is I think we have to consider what is in the ASX 200 and contrast the winners with the losers, because the financial sector has pulled back from that 7,000 level, and it has been largely range-bound, and it was weaker today from the region of the trend mean. Whereas when we look at the resources sector, it was so incredibly depressed at the beginning of 2016 and then experienced that impressive move that this looks to me at least to be nothing more than some consolidation in the region of the peak from earlier this year before it breaks on the upside. There is the potential that the resources sector reclaims part of the rather impressive weighting in the ASX that it had before the commodity bust, whereas the banks represent an awfully large chunk of the index, and they are susceptible to the property market, which is rather expensive. And the Australian dollar, which had broken upwards, is now consolidating as the dollar strengthens. That should at least help to flatter the value of Australian shares from the perspective of a foreign investor. But I think, you know, what happens with the dollar and whether it can now find support in the region of the upper side of that underlying range will be a big determinant. I don't think anyone's going to be worried from the perspective of a foreign investor if we get some consolidation. But if it turns into a deeper pullback, then that is going to represent a headwind for the Australian market, as foreign investors will look for more attractive assets elsewhere, and not least as the Fed is raising interest rates, and Australia is unlikely to be raising interest rates anytime soon. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.